Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, that's pound 529, from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
And we begin the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. I am Dave Ross here at Circus Sports, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. He is our GM, Michael Lombardi, back on the East Coast in Jersey. Michael, what a big overnight. It feels like every time we start off the show of the day, we've got news from the night before that we have to address, and we're going to get to all of it. We do have a great show lined up. Will Hill is going to join us later on this hour. Adam Burke, our managing editor, is going to join us in hour number two. So a whole lot to get to. But you see right off the top, Michael, it's something you and I talked about over the last 2 days. You kind of hinted that you thought the Colts had to make a move to Joe Flacco. They have officially made that move. I'm assuming you're not surprised by it because you kind of endanger losing the locker room if you don't make a move like this?
Well, I mean, I don't know how Shane Steichen could stand in front of his team and say Anthony Richardson gives us the best chance to win. I mean, his numbers are really bad. You're lying to your team, just like Deshaun Watson and the Browns were lying to their team. I mean, you know, you're an analytical-based organization, and you're telling us that Deshaun Watson is really playing well? Come on, please. And then the next guy goes in there and throws for 400 yards. I mean, Flacco already proved it when he comes in the game and throws. So, look, this is a move that Shane Steichen and the Colts organization had to make. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to come back to Anthony Richardson at some point. It doesn't mean he's a blown pick. But what it does mean is when you picked him fourth overall, you risk the fact that it's going to be a longer development program than what we think. He wasn't ready to play leaving Florida. I said it at the time. He should have stayed in school another year. He came out. He was rewarded with the fourth pick overall in the draft, which made my statement of staying in school ridiculous. But the reality of it is he should have, because he needed more game experience. He was so inconsistent. And everything we're seeing in his first full season where he could stay somewhat healthy is a player that is vastly inconsistent. Look, the telltale sign on Anthony Richardson is watch the game and see how many times the defensive players get their hands on the football. Like, they break up the ball every single throw. And Steichen was just dumb enough to let him throw the ball at the end of the first half and cost himself the game when he throws the pick six. So, look, the only thing that's saving Steichen from getting called out as a horrendous game manager, which was proven last year during a lot of games, especially the Browns game, is that Richardson's so bad. That's the only thing. We're not picking on Steichen, or else we should be picking on Steichen, because he's a very good play caller. He's a very good play designer. He's a horrible head coach. Let's just be clear. He's a horrible head coach in terms of game management and situational football. You can't get any worse than Shane has been, especially when not recognizing that his quarterback couldn't convert a third down. He almost threw a pick six on the play before, and he comes back and he gives the game away to the Texans. So to me, this was a move they had to make for credibility.
We're seeing this number now down to 5 with Joe Flacco getting the start at U.S. Bank Stadium on Sunday night against the Vikings there. And, you know, you mentioned when you're looking at Shane Steichen, and he's not going to get a whole lot of angst for this because it wasn't his pick. It's Chris Ballard's pick as the GM. Michael, as a GM, what are those conversations like when you make a quarterback change? Does it stay solely with the coach, or that's got to be something that you, the GM, head coach, we're all in this thing together?
I would think the owner's in this, too. Look, I think Steichen had a lot to do with the Anthony Richardson pick, too, David. I think, to me, it's obviously Ballard's call, but you're not making that pick unless the coach gives his blessing on it. You just can't do that. There was too much. There were too many concerns. There were too many things that had to be ironed out. There had to be a development program within place. Now, that got lost because he got hurt last year, but when they put him out there to start the opening of the season, it was comical because this kid was no more ready to be the starting quarterback than I was to land on the moon. I mean, it just wasn't right. He's got a long way to go. And you know, he's the great Fran Fraschilla once said, he's 2 years away from being 2 years away. That's what he was. You know, and so let's be clear. I mean, nobody at the University of Florida thought that Anthony Richardson, they all thought he was a credible athlete. They all thought he had an incredible arm. They all thought he was incredibly fast, but they didn't think he was an incredibly good player yet. And I think that's the gap. So to make him put him back on the bench, I think it's in the best interest of the kid, because every week he wasn't getting better. He was getting worse, whereas Bo Nix is getting better. Jaden Daniels is already good. Mm-hmm. Caleb Williams is getting better. Right, we're seeing this. Drake May is getting better. I mean, this is the one where if you're Chris Ballard, you're disheartened because you're watching these other quarterbacks come in the league and play half decent, and you're saying, wait a minute, what about my guy? Why isn't my guy getting better? Why isn't my guy? Why does my guy look like Zach Wilson and not like Jaden Daniels? There's a question for you.
Yeah, it feels like it's the old chicken and the egg, that you've got examples on both sides of guys that have played right away, as you're mentioning, that are getting some instant success. Or you can go back to the Patrick Mahomes sitting for a full year until that last game of the year when the Alex Smith was the starting quarterback his rookie year. You know, Josh Allen getting a lot of time early on in his Buffalo days. Well, there is no rhyme or reason to it, is it, Michael? Is it solely based on, man, when I watch him practice, this kid's ready, or I watch in this practice and this kid's not?
That's really what it is, and we don't get a chance to watch practice. But I can't believe there's no way that Anthony Richardson's good in practice, because he's so bad in the games in terms of his location of the football, his inability to really read the coverage, his inability to look off the coverage, right? Everybody gets focused on reading coverages, right? Well, the coverages are not that challenging. It's reading the triangle, right? Most plays are configured to where you're looking at a triangle. You throw the ball at one point to the next point to the other point. And his ability to process that point to point to point is really bad. And so that's why the defense gets so many hands on the football, because they know where he's thrown it. They're just watching his eyes. They've kind of tuned themselves to see where he is with the ball, and they move him, and he moves them to the location, and then they break on the ball. And then you're almost surprised if he doesn't intercept it. I mean, Houston had their hands on more footballs. That it was unbelievable. I'm watching the game, and they had 10 passes broken up, Dave, in the game last week. 10. That's ridiculous. Eric Murray had 3 in the game. We don't talk about that. Is when the defense gets their hands on the football, that's on the quarterback, right? Now sometimes they get their hands on the ball because they make a great play. Okay, but when they got their hands on 10 balls and one player has his hands on 3, actually 2 players. Lassiter had his hands on 3 too, and then he throws a pick 6. Come on, you can't be a starting quarterback in the NFL. You have no ability to do that. That's ridiculous.
We're going to get a lot into the Thursday night game with the Texans and the Jets, with Houston right now leading this division. But Indianapolis, plus $1.25 to make the postseason. They are 4-4. And I know they've lost twice to the Texans, and Elliot, our producer, said, you don't have to tell me as a Colts fan. I watched through those games and suffered through them. Does this give that kind of re-energize this locker room, Michael, and say, all right, we've got Joe Flacco. We saw what he did last year in Cleveland, literally off his couch, and took them to the playoffs. Can we start thinking maybe of having some visions of grandeur in Indianapolis now?
Well, I mean, look, it still comes back to, can they play good enough on defense? I thought last week they really changed up a lot of what they did. They tried to pressure the passer a lot more, and they put C.J. Stroud under a lot of pressure. I thought he played well. But, at some point this defense is just not good enough. It doesn't stop the run. They're 30th in yards allowed. People love to run the football on them. They're 28th in yards allowed overall. And when they go outside that dome, you know, they're going to give up big plays. You know, last week they held Houston to 96 yards rushing. That was the first time they did it. But they have struggled to have consistency within their defense. And a lot of this is injuries. But they had Buckner back last week, which is what they need. You know, I think to me, when you break down their schedule, their best win of the year has come against Pittsburgh, right? They were able to beat Pittsburgh by a field goal. They've lost a lot of close games. I mean, you know, they beat a bad Miami team 16-10. That was an ugly game. Miami, you know, I mean, you can't get, you know, Tennessee, they beat 20-17. Tennessee's not any good, but they're in all these close games. The one thing about the Colts, they're the best team so far this year in covering spreads. I mean, they've done a. I think they're 6-1 going into, or 7-1 going into this weekend, Dave.
Yeah, it is rather amazing when you look at their schedule. You're right. That Steeler win, and boy, if Justin Fields doesn't fumble it late, they might throw that game away. But they are 4-4, and you see they don't have the bye until later on this year. So you feel like, man, you know, we're going to talk about this Vikings game a lot too, because they just traded for a new left tackle. We'll get into that later in the show too. But that is the remaining schedule right now for the Colts. I mentioned the Texans, Michael, and just very quickly, it is official that Stephon Diggs will be out for the remainder of the year. Yeah. I know he's a free agent to be at the end of the year. I don't know if he's already done in Houston, but you know, you're waiting for Nico Collins to come back. Short week, Thursday night against the Jets. How much does that really hurt C.J. Stroud and company going forward?
Well, he led the team in catches with 47. Now, he just averaged under 11 yards a catch at 10.6. He had 3 touchdowns. He wasn't the Stephon Diggs that we remember in Minnesota or even in Buffalo, but he was someone that the quarterback trusted. So now you don't have Nico Collins gone. You don't have Stroud. You don't have Diggs. Robert Woods came in and played. I think Tank Dell's going to have to get the ball, but they were not the same. They haven't been the same team offensively since they've lost Nico Collins. I mean, that's been a problem. And last week, the offensive line was really bad. I mean, the left guard, Green, gave up a lot of pressures. They had to bench him during the course of the game. The right tackle has not been Howard's not been very good. Stroud was under a lot of pressure last week. He really was. What's interesting about this Houston Texan team is they've been able to force turnovers, and I think that's been the key to what they've been able to do. They've been able to, they've been able to turn the ball over with their defense, and this defense has not allowed 20 first downs all year. That's pretty remarkable. So they forced 9 turnovers in the last 3 weeks, and they've only given the ball up twice. To me, that's been the key. That's saved their offense, Dave. Their defense doesn't give up many first downs, and they turn the ball over.
Going to get into a lot more of that Thursday night contest. Texans obviously going to be limping in there without the receivers against the Jets at MetLife on Thursday. And also when we come back, Michael, some other trades that we want to get to involving the Vikings. Curious enough against that Colts game. And also maybe a move in the arms race in the AFC at the wide receiver position. We'll talk all about that. Just getting it started here. It's the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi Line here on a Wednesday. And Michael, I got to ask you, being back there on the East Coast, is everybody just a big release? Oh, the Yankees won a World Series game. They come back. They're down early. The big eighth inning. They win 11-4. Garrett Cole's going to go tonight. We're going to have Will Hill, by the way, on the next segment, so we can ask Mr. Yankee about that as well. But what's that like in the East Coast? Are they still believing that this is somehow possible?
I wasn't over at the Borgata Sportsbook, but I mean, down here in South Jersey, it's mostly all Philly fans. So the Yankee hysteria or the Yankee panic doesn't always permeate through the area. There's still a depression over the Phillies down here, David. So, you know, my question to you is, as a baseball lover, I mean, why would anybody pitch to Freddie Freeman?
What
are we doing in the first inning? Do we have to spot the Dodgers 2 runs every time we turn around? I mean, is this like a requirement? I mean, I don't know. I played Strat-O-Matic baseball when I was a kid. You know, it's a card game. I played it with Danny Reynolds and Michael Cennino. Like, there's no – you couldn't walk a guy intentionally because you had to roll the dice to get it in there. But, I mean, like, if this guy's on a roll, like, I'm not pitching to him. I'm a smart enough manager to know I don't want this guy on my team.
No, I don't think he had an extra base hit in the month of October until the World Series, and now all of a sudden it's home run, home run, home run. 4 in a row. He's now hit 6 home runs dating back to his Braves days. So that's 6 games. The last 6 games he's played in a World Series, home run, never been done before. And I was trying to think, Michael, I don't know what the NFL equivalent of that is. Is that playing in...
I don't know either.
I can't even... I'm trying to like really grasp it when you say 4 straight games in the World Series with the home run. It's rather remarkable. I'm with you, though. Garrett Cole, I know you're Garrett Cole tonight, right? But you got to pitch carefully to Freddie Freeman. If you walk him, you walk him, right?
Well, I mean, I want to get out of the first inning at least with no runs allowed. I'd like to go into the dugout at the bottom of the first looking like we got a chance. We didn't give up the game here yet, you know?
Yeah.
Last thing I think is, you know, look, I know left-handed hitters in Yankee Stadium are what you want and the short porch over in right field. But, my Lord, I mean, I think you got to be smart. Garrett Cole's got to be really smart tonight. And Boone's got to be smart, the manager, to not let the game get away in the first. I mean, look, it is interesting the way this dynamic has been set up where you play two in Los Angeles, three here, and then two back there. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the Yankees are fortunate enough to win tonight, you know, all of a sudden now it's a two-game series, right? And you know, it's just, you know, and if you can get your, you know, obviously Aaron Judge actually made contact with the baseball last night, which was great for Yankee fans to see. So he didn't strike out. So I think to me, you get some momentum. Look, I know it's never been done before and it's probably improbable, but you know, when you just take it one game at a time, it happens in hockey all the time, right? These hockey teams go down 3-0 and they come back and win four straight. I kind of like the way it's set up. I like the way that they play three in a row. What's been really fascinating is the weather has cooperated. I mean, we're sitting here on October 30th, right? And it's still, this morning when I drove in, it was 65 degrees outside here in Ocean City. I mean, that's beach weather.
I'm getting up here in Las Vegas, and it was 47 degrees to start my – I'm like, wait. How did I get back on the East Coast? I don't know. But, yeah.
How did that happen? Like –
Do we get that from California? I'm not quite sure where that weather is breaking, but it's a little bit chippy and a little bit cold out here in Las Vegas. And again, we're going to talk to Will Hill all about the World Series as well, not just New York football, but also just want to remind everybody that if you're really interested in the ponies, we got the Breeders' Cup coming up, and the VSiN Breeders' Cup betting guide is going to give you that winning edge that you're looking for, packed with insights from our very top experts. And Michael, look, I know you're a horse guy as well. I'm not as big a one, but we got you covered here at VSiN. So if you're serious about cashing in with the Breeders' Cup weekend, you got to become a VSiN Pro subscriber to get the guide. It's now just $120 for full access all the way through May 1st. So sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. So there it is for you. Get ready for the Breeders' Cup. Everything you need to bet the ponies, it's all there for you when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. We mentioned there were some trades in the NFL last night, and I know some people don't really, maybe it's just a cursory glance. They don't think much of it. I know you do. And Cam Robinson got dealt from the Jaguars at left tackle over to the Minnesota Vikings. And we saw it with Darisaw going out for the year in that devastating injury to Minnesota. What'd you make of that move? And does it say more about Cam Robinson and the way the Jags think about him, or desperation time for the Vikings that we've got to get the semblance of a left tackle in the building for Sam Darnold?
Well, they obviously think they can make Cam Robinson a better player. Remember, he was their franchise player down in Jacksonville. They paid him a lot of money. But again, like most Jacksonville contracts, they pay a guy and then they get rid of the guy 2 years later. It's been happening time and time again. We can go over it. But Robinson had not been playing well. They drafted Walker Little, a Stanford left tackle, in the second round. So many people in the Jaguars organization thought he could be Joe Staley. That hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. He hasn't played well at all. And this offensive line for Jacksonville isn't very good. I think if you're Minnesota, you're saying, look, we'll take the guy on. It really cost us nothing. It cost him, I think, you know, it was a pick swap in the player. You're taking on the $17 million of salary that comes in here. You're just trying to hold the Band-Aid. You put David Quisenberry in the game last week, and that didn't work out. So you have this huge hole. Sixth-round pick Walter Rouse isn't ready to play at left tackle. So to me, it's one of those things where you're hoping that you can make Robinson, because on the tape, he doesn't show to be a good enough player to be a left tackle. Look, replacing Darisaw is really hard. He's a good player. They paid him like one. But they need somebody over there. It's the hardest position to overcome. Look at the New York Football Giants. I mean, they lost Andrew Thomas, and they haven't even come close to replace. They signed Hubbard off the street, and they started him in the game. Mm. Meanwhile, they got Evan Neal sitting on the bench. They won't even play Evan Neal. That tells you how bad Evan Neal is. I mean, Joe Shane is remarkable for living in New York City and being the general manager of one of the greatest franchises of all time in one of the largest markets of all time. He takes no crap for missing on Evan Neal. He takes no crap for missing on Deontay Banks. I mean, his drafts have been a disaster, and yet everybody's saying, well, let's bring everybody back because things are going so well here in New York. Whereas I think Minnesota, I mean, look, give them credit. They made a move that's going to help them. I don't know if it'll help them. They got to get them to play better. Let's say that.
10.5 wins is the adjusted win total here. I played them in the summer at 7.5. I still feel pretty good about that, obviously. But 5-2, they have lost two in a row. And now when you lose arguably your best, clearly your best lineman in Darrisaw going forward, try to replace him now with Robinson, is there cause for concern here that this is starting to level out, that maybe the Vikings not as good as that 5-0 start and with those two losses in a row?
Well, I think, look, let's take the Giant game as a perfect example, right? The Giants go in and play Pittsburgh, and in the first half, they did a very good job of protecting the left tackles, right? They chipped. They put tight ends over there. And then in the second half, in the fourth quarter, for some reason, Brian Daboll got amnesia and decided he wasn't going to do it. And guess what happened, Dave? C.J. Watt all of a sudden made a presence in the game.
Right.
Right? And so, you know, so to me, if using that as the landscape, what you have to do is, you know, whether it's Cam Robinson, whether it's David Quisenberry, whether it's Walter Rouse, whomever it may be, you're going to have to really help this player. You're going to have to give him some help over on the left side. You're going to have to chip. You're going to have to put the back over. You can't be in scat protection, which is just get everybody out in the route. You can't leave him isolated on an island. And if you do, you're going to have to throw a three-step drop pass. You're going to have to get the ball out quick. So at least game plan-wise, like the Giants did in the first half, you can move the football. But you got to be disciplined about it. You can't have amnesia like they did, and all of a sudden, oh, we forgot. You know, and so next thing you know, Watt's lined up over on your left tackle. Look, they're going to try to exploit it. There's no question. You go in a game, and but they want to see what you're going to do with it. You take your chances from play to play, but if you want to throw the ball down the field, you want to get it to Justin Jefferson, you better make sure you got a tight end, Josh Oliver, over there to help chip him.
I'm looking at what the Ravens did, too, and it was kind of like what we talked about yesterday with Uche going over there to the Chiefs, and I wonder if this is the next counter move here in the trade market. Deontay Johnson is going from Carolina to Baltimore. How significant, if at all, is that move for Baltimore to get another weapon at wide receiver?
I didn't think Baltimore needed another weapon. I mean, I know Bateman had that ball hit him right in the head and dropped it. I'm sure they were probably upset with that. And I know they probably don't know whether Aguilar can consistently make catches, so I can understand it. But to me, I think they need a corner. I think they need a corner really badly. You know, this week they're going in and they get Denver coming in, and without Michael Pierce inside, that affects their run defense. He's a really good defensive tackle, run and pass. They won't have Marlon Humphrey, the corner, because he's injured. He's their slot corner. He's very good. So I think, to me, I didn't understand the move with Johnson. And of course, I don't understand what Carolina does under the leadership of Dan Morgan. I mean, he trades a player for a fifth and gives back a sixth. Do you know how close those picks are going to be together? I mean, they're probably, I mean, we should make a bet. I mean, I don't think those picks will be five picks apart.
No.
I mean, Baltimore will probably trade the 28th, 29th, 30th pick in the fifth round, and they're going to get back the first pick in the sixth round. I mean, they basically gave nothing for the guy.
By the way, 9.5-point favorites right now, Ravens over the Broncos. That number's gone up a little bit, and I know everybody's thinking the Ravens going to be angry after that loss in Cleveland. Feels a little heavy for my liking there with that number going up to 9.5. All right, Michael, when we come back, we're going to get the King of Connecticut. Will Hill is going to join the program. Yeah. I think we should sneak in some Yankee talk to begin before we discuss NFL as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and Laker talk, too, because he's running these franchises. And it's amazing.
Yeah, he likes them all. We'll discuss next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line continues. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi coming at you. And Michael, you know, we always love to catch up with the King of Connecticut, the one and only Will Hill. He is the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. You can follow him, as I do, on X at Not The Will Hill. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Well, I don't know if you heard Michael and I talking about your Yankees, but do you now believe that this is doable after what you saw last night in the Bronx? Can they actually make it all the way back?
I think they can send it back to L.A. Winning the series is a different story. And you could look at it one of two ways. You say, oh, man, they avoided the sweep. They showed some fight. It's a positive they won last night. Okay, yeah. And they're still alive. They got Cole with a chance to send them back to L.A. But, man, I know a lot of Yankee fans, and this is how I think. it really makes game one hurt even more.
Ooh.
Because if they had just lost last night, and it looked like they were going to, Freeman hits the home run in the first inning. Nobody in America thinks the Yankees are coming back and winning that game. It's just like, here we go again. Freeman kills him again. They're about to get swept. You could have at least had some peace and lived with it. Say, you know what? Dodgers are just a much better team, which they are. They get swept. And now it plays with your mind because it's 3-1. If they had just won game one, which they could have, absolutely should have, we're talking about 2-2, best of three, and we're getting the series we expected to get. So that game one, if the Yankees don't do the unthinkable and actually win the series, which I still don't think they will, that game one is going to haunt the Yankees, haunt Yankee fans for a long time because that game was there for the taking. They gave it away in just frivolous fashion. They gave it away a couple different times. So I think Cole pitches well tonight. I think they do get back to L.A. And I don't know if you guys saw the stat. I was amazed by this. The last every team that's gotten down 3-0, the last time a team down 3-0 has won a game four was 1970. So yeah, it's unusual that a team even forces a game five. So they've already at least done that. And look, you got your best pitcher on the mound at home with a chance to force game six. And once you force game six, it becomes, hey, two games, anything can happen. A game six matchup would be a nightmare because, you know, we talked about this on our Saturday show. Rodon versus that Dodger lineup is not a good scenario for the Yankees. Rodon gives up a million homers. The Dodgers hit a million homers. Rodon has been good on the road. So I think they win tonight, ultimately losing six, but at least they gave us one more day of baseball here.
Well, don't you think you should maybe message Aaron Boone not to pitch to Freddie Freeman? Do you think that might be a good idea? You might want to text him and say, like, can we just get out of the first inning without being behind?
My goodness, would be a nice idea, right? At least put the ball in the outside part of the plate. I mean, you put that ball at Yankee Stadium, that lefty swing, the inside part of the plate. Oh. It's just you're asking for trouble when you go inside because he turns on it, and all he's got to do is have to get all of it. He's just got to get 75% of it, and that thing ends up as a souvenir.
6-1, by the way,
yeah,
gentlemen.
You know what would happen? You know what would happen, Will? Sorry, David. You know what happened? If Steinbrenner were still alive, Freddie Freeman would be a Yankee next year.
Oh, don't get me
there's
started.
No
don't
question, right? Am I right about that? I mean,
don't get me started. 100%. Rizzo and Freeman were free agents the same year. Rizzo just cost less money. Freeman cost too much money. And they make excuses now. Freeman, he would have never gone to the Yankees. He wanted to be in the West Coast. These guys all take the most money. George wanted to win more than he wanted, you know, cared about the money. Absolutely, Freeman would have been a Yankee. Drives me nuts. Freeman, Bryce Harper, all these guys, at least some of these guys would have been Yankees. They don't operate that way anymore. Drives me nuts.
6-1, by the way, gentlemen, for the Yankees to come back and do the impossible and win the next three. That's not long enough, is it, Will?
No. I mean, you think about what it would take to erase a 3-0 deficit in the World Series. Like, man, this is a 1 in a million. It's been done once, obviously, Red Sox over the Yankees. 6-1 doesn't sound that much on the money line. I mean, we see like a 6-1 underdog in college football win pretty much every week. When you think about it, it's only 6-1. It doesn't seem that it seems like you should be getting more bang for your buck.
Tend to agree.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I agree with that. Let's shift gears a little bit and go into some of your college football plays. You like Ohio State and Penn State to go under. You don't have a pick in the game, but you think the under's to play here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who's playing quarterback for Penn State, and look, Franklin is not always the most.
That's what I was
going to
ask you. I don't know either.
Yeah. And the backup didn't look bad. He gave him a nice little running element. I think they could be okay with whoever plays. And look, this new era of college football. Boy, in the old days, you'd do anything to play your starter, but they could lose this game and still make the playoffs. So maybe it's crazy to think this big of a game, you think long-term and maybe hold Aller out even if he can play. So I tend to think he's going to play. I'm not positive. Either way, I like the under, and I lean towards Penn State plus a 3.5, but without knowing who's going to be a quarterback, I'll just stick with the under. I probably like the first half under more than anything. You get around 21.5, 22.5. I just think that this game is going to be similar to last year, where it was a 20-12 game. It was ugly. It was a slog. It was a rock fight. And both these teams are really good against the run. Both these teams are top 15 against the run. Ohio State, like 2.9 yards per carry defensively. Penn State, not far behind. I think they're 14th in the country, like 3.1 yards. And if you look last week, Ohio State couldn't run the ball on Nebraska. It was like 28 carries for 64 yards. And Penn State is much better up front than Nebraska is. Penn State's got a good secondary. I think it's like a boxing match where there's a little feeling out process early. Nobody wants to lose the game. It's a big game, so there's a little punt, play field position, trade body blows for a little bit, and then see what's up. And I think first half under is a good way to go. I think maybe like that. I could see 13-6 at half, 10-7 at half. I do think we'll get a conservative low-scoring first half. So I like the under for the game, under for the first half.
45 is the total there. 45 is also the total between Oregon and Michigan. And I know you and I have watched some Michigan football, maybe not so impressive this year. What do you make of the Maize and Blue? You think they're going to struggle to score against the Quack Attack?
I do. I just think Michigan's a service academy. That's what they've turned into. And they were talking, I was reading some of the Michigan, you know, stories last week, the beat writers, man, this is the best game Michigan's gotten from a quarterback all year last Saturday against Michigan State. They threw for 120 yards. This is just, they don't have a passing attack. And Oregon's too good to be one-dimensional. I like Michigan. You know how I like these team totals, Dave. Mm-hmm. I like the Michigan team total under 14.5. You can really isolate your handicap and say, you know, I don't want to lay, you know, over two touchdowns, but I think this team is just going to struggle scoring against this defense. I think Michigan's going to have a really hard time scoring. I like that Michigan team total under 14.5.
Yeah, they will. And Oregon's defense, I mean, when you watch them from the first game of the year, you know, where they struggled, they struggled to stop Boise State running the ball. They barely won that game. But Idaho moved the football on them. That was a close game mm-hmm. to where they are now. You could see Dan Lanning's team has really improved, and that's the mark of a really good coach. Let's talk about the Indianapolis Colts. We've been on them all day talking about Richardson becoming the star, being demoted. And to me, the Colts are one of the most painful teams to watch every week. I know they've covered spreads seven times this year, but, man, it's hard to watch Gus Bradley. It's hard to watch this offense. But somehow they keep it within the margin. You like them again this week against your Vikings, too. You're going against your favorite team.
Yeah, maybe this is just the pessimistic Viking fan in me. And I know they made the trade yesterday for Robinson, but losing Darisaw was huge. And, boy, watching them Thursday night against the Rams, there were guys wide open all over the field. I just think water's finding its level a little bit. Obviously, you know, it's a good story. It's a good team. I just think, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we're talking about, is this the best team in the league? Well, I think we can say pretty clearly now it's not the best team in the league. It's a pretty good team, but I just think laying over a field goal, five's a lot of points in the NFL. And Flacco will, you know, will move the chains. He'll be able to, with his experience, at least maybe diagnose or recognize what Flores is throwing at him. Could see this being a field goal game. I'll take the five here with Indy.
I'm a little surprised when I saw your next selection here. We're going out to the other desert, and it's the Cardinals hosting the Bears. Bears, I don't know how demoralizing that loss is going to be from D.C. a week ago. Is that the angle here that's going to be hard to get back up? And Arizona's playing much better football.
Yeah, Arizona's a tricky team to figure out. That is the angle, though. I just don't trust that Bears coaching staff off a demoralizing loss to get them to rebound. And if you listen to Athlete, man, no accountability. They didn't take, you know, acknowledge at all, hey, the McLaurin catch to set them up in Hail Mary range. They're like, oh, it didn't matter. It was going to come down to a Hail Mary anyway. No, it wasn't. They weren't in Hail Mary range. They needed that 10, 12 yards to get in Hail Mary, range. They still fell short on the Hail Mary. It still fell, you know, 2 or 3 yards short. It needed to get batted back. So there was no accountability whatsoever from the coaching staff. That's a devastating loss. I just don't trust a bad coaching staff. And that is a bad coaching staff, in my opinion, to get that team back ready to play. Like I said, Arizona's a weird team, but they move the ball. They're pretty well coached. I would expect Arizona to win this game.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be an interesting game because a ton of Bear fans live in Phoenix, retired Chicagoans that live there. They'll have that stadium. It'll almost be a home game for the Bears. But to me, what bothered me, Will, the most about that is he had three timeouts and he didn't use any of them. Right, he didn't take a Kodak. He didn't get himself set up. He's got a player running wild on the other side, Stevenson, you know, acting like a fool, you know. And if he's looking at it, I saw Caleb Williams coaching the team from the sideline, which was bothersome to me. You know, I think they do a good job defensively. I'm not going to argue that. But you're right. Arizona's a funny team. I mean, the disc jockey misunderstood him. I mean, you know, he had a chance to put the game away. But this Miami team is really comical. Nobody says a bad word about Miami, even though they can't beat anybody. I'm with you, though. I think this Cardinal team is underestimated.
Yeah, I'm with you. Are we getting Embiid and Paul George? Are they playing tonight? What's the deal with our Sixers here, Lombardi?
No, Embiid's not going to play tonight. That's already been posted. I think I don't know about Paul George, but Embiid, look for him sometime mid-February, maybe March. I think that would be the time. You know, I mean, you know, because all he needs to do is play in the playoffs because he's able to stay healthy and he's able to not fall down. So I don't know why anybody's debating this. I mean, it's, you know, it's proven that he can stay healthy. It's proven that he can dominate in the playoff time.
He's Mariano Rivera. Just put him in the ninth inning. You don't need to start him.
Just put him in the ninth inning. Yeah, that's all you can do. And you know, yeah, and he'll take care of everything. Don't worry about it. It's a comedy. It really is a complete comedy.
Enter Sandman. Just get him out there, just like Rivera. Will, you're the best. Appreciate your time as always, my friend.
See you guys.
There he is, everybody, the great Will Hill. We are back, Michael, to get into something you wrote yesterday. That's next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue our conversation here on the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. Great having Will Hill in the last segment here. And Michael, I did want to get into your writing spotlight this week. And there was a great movie in the 80s called Trading Places, where you had Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, right? And they kind of did the whole premise of the movie was just switch them out and see what the life looks like with those guys. You kind of did that this week with the head coaches in the NFL, right? And your question was, what if Mike Tomlin coached the Bengals? Can you tell me how you got to there and what this thought exercise is in this writing spotlight?
Well, it really started when I was about 12 years old. So when I was 12, I played Strat-O-Matic baseball with Danny Reynolds and Michael Cennino. It's a card game, right? You have cards. I still have the board that we played on here in my office. And because it kind of was a turning point in my life, because it got me to fall in love with the draft. It got me to fall in love with picking teams and team management and construction. But you would pick players or you would build a team. And so you would roll the dice and we would rotate who would play and all that. Well, when Cennino got on a roll, he would become arrogant and he would say, you know, and Reynolds and I might be complaining and we might say, oh, you know, you're just getting lucky. And he said, well, I'll show you how much lucky I am. Give me your team. I'll manage your team and you could take my team and I'll beat you. Mm. And so that whole idea has always been in my head because, you know, it's like, okay, you think you're that smart, right? And so it's to say, so now I'm sitting here looking and I'm thinking, what if Mike Tomlin coached the Bengals? You know, what if Mike Tomlin coached, or what if Andy Reid coached the Bengals? What would that look like, right? And so to me, I think as an executive, I've always thought about that concept going back to Cennino, you know, because it was like, it's true. Like there's certain levels of excellence that you have to get to. And Zach Taylor, when I watch his team, and I don't think they're a soft team. I think the players are tough. I know Ted Karras. We drafted him in New England. No one's tougher than Ted, but they play soft. And the reason they play such bad defense and the reason they're so poor is because they are soft, because of the way he coaches. He coaches in make everybody happy. He coaches in let's not work too hard. He coaches in we don't need to be too physical. I mean, when you're sitting there and you can't stop the run – and you can't stop teams from getting first downs. I mean, they're 30th in the league in first downs allowed. You know, they're 20th in yards allowed per attempt. They're 24th in yards allowed on the ground. I mean, it's just really bad. And so you don't see them improving, right? I said this to Will Hill in the last block. You know, Dan Lanning, one thing I liked about Dan Lanning's team, because my son coaches there, so I've watched every game closely, is they've actually, I mean, they barely beat Idaho. The next week, they barely beat Boise, right? And I'm like, there's no way this team's going to be a national champion or ever going to go to the 12. They can barely beat these two teams. And yet they've continually improved because he coaches them hard. Whereas I don't see that with Zach Taylor. I mean, I'm not impressed that you beat Carolina, Zach. I'm not impressed that you beat the Giants. And frankly, you shouldn't have beat the Browns last week. Right. If the Browns would have changed quarterbacks earlier, you wouldn't have won that game.
If I told you at this point of the year.
I just think the lack of physicality bothers me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. The Steelers right now, Michael, to your point about switching coaches, the Steelers are minus $4 to make the playoffs, plus $1.15 for the Bengals. I mean, if we had said that during the summer, people would have freaked out. Like, there's no way that would be possible halfway through, right? And you make this point. You say, look, Zach Taylor, you might want him as your neighbor, but not necessarily the man who can lead the Bengals back to being a respectable team. The Bengals have no physical toughness. It's not a knock on the players. The criticism is directed at the coaching. The Bengals don't demand being tough. Tomlin is the antithesis of that, right? He demands the toughness. He demands the standard is the standard. As I know my guy Bryant McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champion from the Steelers, would always tell me. Like that, we got a standard here. Do you think that's Zach Taylor's not setting that standard?
No, I just don't. I think he's just a nice guy. Like I said, you want him as your neighbor. I'm sure he probably passes out big candy on Thursday night. You know, you want him as your neighbor. You want somebody, you know, he's just a nice guy. And he doesn't have that innate, like, this is like, you know, one of the things I think, like the Chiefs' behavior, adding Uche, the Chiefs' behavior, adding Hopkins, is they're just not satisfied. They're not just they're pushing the needle. They want more, and I don't see that from Zach. I mean, look, he's got a nickel running back, Chad Brown. Everything's about we're just going to throw it. We're going to put it on Joe Burrow's shoulders and let him see if he can do it. They're the 29th in rushing attempts. They're 26th in average per attempt. You know, can they throw it down the field? Sure. But when it becomes so easy to run Y stick to get 4 yards or to run spacing to get 4 yards, then all of a sudden you take the path of least resistance. And that's what he does. And so, look, I know he went to a Super Bowl, but so did Lovie Smith. So did Raymond Barry. So did Jeff Fisher. Mm. That doesn't make you an elite coach. Right? That doesn't say, okay, hands are off, Zach, you're just a great coach. I think there's a lot of I think if you could give truth serum to Lou Amoromo, and he would tell you, like, this is crap. Like, I can't be the defensive coordinator in this situation. They caught lightning in a bottle 1 year, right? They did. And they almost caught it twice last year. But this team hasn't improved at all. And they have no physicality at running. Zach Moss isn't a physical runner. They let Joe Mixon go, which he didn't look like it was a very good player for them last year. But obviously what I've learned is Mixon was good. They just couldn't get the team to play at that level. So I don't see how Joe Burrow can sit behind a podium and say, oh, we're going to win 10 games. You're too soft to win 10 games. You're going to have a hard time beating the Raiders. Then you got to go on the road and play Baltimore and play the Chargers. The Chargers are going to punch him in the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the physicality that you're talking about. By the way, I love these conversations, Michael, because I don't think they're had enough, because you need some tough love out there and you need to be introspective, and Zach Taylor needs to hear this. So if you're the Bengals, you're supposed to be this team that everybody, by the way, was betting the Bengals through the roof this summer. They're going to win
too.
This division.
I was on them this summer.
Yeah.
I was on them, David. I love their team. I think they got, you know, but I was counting on them being better in the offensive line, but they're not. I was counting on them being better on defense with the two additions of the safeties, with Sone and bringing Von Bell back. But it hasn't manifested itself. And I watched their team and I'm saying, where there's no improvement. I mean, there's really no improvement. I mean, you gave up, you know, 520 yards to Baltimore, and the next week you come back and the Giants, who can't really move the football, put 309 on you. And the Browns, with a bad offense, go 336, right? I mean, like, it's just that they're soft. They really are. Mm. And the way the Eagles treated them last week when I was watching that game, because, you know, that was like a pick'em game, right?
Yeah.
When I'm watching that game last week, I'm saying, damn, I should have been all over Philly. I knew this about the Bengals. I should have been all over Philly. Philly's just too more physical than they are.
They were laying 2.5, the Bengals, by the end of the day. I was on the wrong side, Michael, because I thought, oh, they've turned the corner, right? That even though it was the Browns win and the Bengals or the Giants the week before, they've not been impressive. Can you change your stripes? Can Zach Taylor change, or is this just who he is, Michael?
I think it's who he is, and they're really, as I wrote about, they're a 7-on-7 team. Like if they were in a 7-on-7 league where you took out blocking and tackling, they would look good. But, you know, everybody makes it out that, well, we don't have T. Higgins. No, you can't run the ball, right? I mean, the one measure that I think we should all look at when we're handicapping is what team can run, what teams can't run the ball, and what teams can't stop the run. Because when that happens, when those two things come aligned, okay, when those two things come aligned, and they are in Cincinnati, 28th in terms of yards gained on the ground, 24th in yards allowed on the ground. When those two things come aligned, you have a bad team.
Still winless, by the way, at home. Bengals will try to rectify this against the Raiders, laying 7.5 with a total of 46. I gotta be honest with you, like when I hear you say that, and again, if you just put Mike Tomlin on there, because some people go, oh, Tomlin kind of gets lucky, he's got a horseshoe and all that stuff. I'm like, no, like when you win this much, no, it's habitual, right?
Or put Jim Harbaugh, let him coach the Bengals. What do you think that would look like?
Very good.
What do you think that would look like?
Physical.
I mean, just like put a professional, put somebody who believes in toughness, who believes in physicality. That's what I'm trying to get to. And if you're Zach Taylor and you just think you can call these plays, like these guys that all work for Sean McVay actually think they know what Sean's doing. And yet the reality of it is Sean can't win games if he doesn't run the ball. How did he beat Minnesota last week? Well, Williams got going. They were able to run the football effectively against a team that typically plays really good run defense. If Sean can't run the ball, he can't move the ball. He can't. And his receivers, they have to block. That's not the case in Cincinnati. Cincinnati's in 11 personnel every time, right? Now they're giving the ball to Gesicki, which is great. He converts third downs, but there's no yards after the catch. He's their version of Tyler Boyd, which wasn't good enough.
By the way, I love the thought exercise, and I think it's a question Bengals fans and certainly ownership needs to have if they're going to be taking themselves seriously, because I think you're right. Not a lot of people are taking them seriously. By the way, very quickly, we still have the World Series. It is the sports equinox going on right now. You need to become a VSiN Pro subscriber if you have not done so already. It's going to include everything through May 1st, by the way, which does include, Michael, the NFL draft, if you can believe that already, in April. It's all for less than $20 a month. It is a limited time offer, so go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Sign up now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Michael, when we come back to begin hour number two, cannot wait to see what is on your mind. And I know you've got a lot of things to say that are on your mind today. Come on back. It's the Lombardi Line.